curiosity is key. So if you can create curiosity with your email in some way, shape, or form whilst keeping it personal, you should definitely be able to increase your percentage of engagements. There's no doubt about that.
Welcome to the Winning with Shopify podcast. This is the podcast to help you scale your Shopify store into a money-making machine. This episode is brought to you by OmniSend, trusted by more than 80,000 Shopify brands just like yours. Everything you need to scale your email marketing and ROI. Send emails, newsletters, and SMS. Build your email list with landing pages and pop-ups. One-click Shopify integration. Get 24/7 email and live chat support all with OmniSend. Now, over to your host, Nick Truman.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another epic episode of the Winning with Shopify podcast. We've got loads of cool stuff to cover today. We've got an amazing guest, and we're in the middle of quite an exciting series as well, talking about customer acquisition, talking about email, and a whole range of other things around that. We're obviously sponsored by OmniSend at the moment, so check out the OmniSend platform. It is pretty cool, and it's got some cool features. And there's also an offer if you go and sign up to our newsletter on our website as well. You can get an offer on that. And we also put offers out on other stuff as well. So shameless plug, sign up to our newsletter. If you're a new listener and you've never listened to this thing before, then massive welcome to you. My name's Nick. I'm based here in the UK, as you can probably tell by my posh accent. Certainly, if you're American, you guys will think we're very posh, which is a flattering comment. So thank you very much. If you've been tuning in for a while, I hope this has made you laugh. It's great to have you guys back. Great to be tuning in again. If you guys haven't already, leave us a review after this episode if you've enjoyed it. Also, leave us a review if you haven't. We like authenticity here. Hit subscribe on whatever channel or platform you're listening to this on as well. Final thing from me, just back to that newsletter. We're running loads of webinars at the moment at my agency, Spec. We did one just a few weeks ago about multi-channel marketing, so how to do marketing across lots of channels, make it all work, and how to allocate budgets, that sort of thing. We've got one which is probably around the same time that this episode will appear as well, with Caroline, who used to host the podcast before me. Caroline and I and my colleague Rob are going to be talking about how to go from $0 to $1 million a year on Shopify. We've got some other exciting guests. We've got another guest a few months later as well. I think it is in May, and he's talking about how he's built his business from $0 to over $10 million a year on Shopify as well. So super exciting. Enough from me. Let's talk about today, and let me introduce my amazing guest. His name is Yandry. We've had a conversation about me getting his name wrong, so apologies if I do pronounce it wrong at any point. And he's from an awesome agency called V8 Media, not too dissimilar to my own agency. So it's going to be awesome to talk to you and share some ideas. But yeah, Yandry, welcome to the show.
Really, such an honor, man. Just amazing to be here. Thank you so much.
Great stuff. Well, let me ask a quick question, as we do with all of our guests before we get cracking. Tell us a little bit about your background and also what V8 Media do as well.
Dude, my background is so disconnected from what I do today. When I was a kid, I always wanted to play professional rugby. And I did. So when I speak to clients, I always say, I used to play professional rugby. And they go, wait, what? Am I really investing my money with the right people? Yeah. So long story short, after playing rugby, I switched to being a personal trainer, and I started just getting tired of selling my hours physically, you know? So I Googled, like anybody else, how to make money online. And that led me to an article that said you need to build a website. So I spent a fortune building a site, and then I waited for the bucks to roll in. And to my surprise, nothing happened, just crickets. So went to Google and I said, like, how do I drive traffic? Google said, do SEO. And I Googled and I asked Google how to do SEO. And then it was just a complicated process. So I was like, no, there must be an easier way. So I discovered Facebook ads back in 2011. And that's when I ran my first Facebook ad. So I've been doing that now for 13 years. And I built my first business on the back of Facebook ads. So drove traffic to the website, sold some meal plans, sold some advertising space, and been very grateful to have sold that to another company. And I learned a lot about business within that environment. It was a huge company. They went from 30 million to 100 million over a couple of years, and worked with some really cool people, learned a lot. And I combined the marketing skills that I've learned. And through the process, you discover people like Russell Brunson and all these other direct response gurus. And I learned about email and all these things across the board. And in 2018, I resigned and just combined all the marketing skills that I've gained over the last decade and combined that with the business skills that I've gained from some really cool mentors and people. So long story short, 2018, I started V8 Media with the idea of being a bottom line agency. So we were one of the first bottom line marketing agencies in South Africa, which the idea of taking your advertising dollars and turning it into actual revenue and profitable revenue. I might add, because ROAS are not always, you know, profit. So we've tried to figure out, you know, what are the margins, what kind of products are they selling, especially when you're doing it online. there's a bit more sense of control, as you know, when it comes to tracking and attribution and so forth. So you can plan a little bit better when it comes to these things. So 2018, we just took off. And I think because we were such a unique agency at that time, you know, we've been very favored in terms of growth. Hmm. And here we are, you know, 30 odd people, 80 odd clients.
Nice.
And yeah, just growing and grateful.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, we didn't mention rugby before we hit record, so that's news to me. And as an avid England rugby fan, like, you know, things are on the up where I am. And yeah, we won't talk about the World Cup.
Well, but I'm in South Africa, so I think it's a little bit more on the up on our side. So, you know, so rugby has always been a passion of mine. So I was lucky enough to play professionally in Italy for about 3 years and then 2 years in South Africa. And nice. After that, I switched to personal training, you know.
Wow. Wow. I mean, certainly, yeah, rugby is an amazing, amazing sport. And I think it's certainly as someone who grew up watching football, like as an English football, watching rugby, it's like actual athletes having some sort of battle with each other, which is brilliant.
The biggest gain I've gotten from playing rugby is to know that your mind is your own limitation, because in rugby, you have to let go of the fear mentally. So the biggest thing I've learned from rugby that has aided me in doing what I'm doing today is to understand that if a big fat guy or strong muscular guy is running at full speed towards you, then you have two options. You either back out and get hurt, or you switch that little voice in your head off that is, you know, screaming fear and anxiety and stress, and you just do your best. Yeah. And I think nine out of 10 times, if you do that, you don't get hurt and everything's actually fine. And you just get up from the tackle and you go, whoa, I actually just tackled that guy.
Absolutely.
And I think it's very similar with the business too. So there's definitely an overlap, which I'm very grateful for.
I know we obviously in the agency side of stuff, but for everyone listening, it's very similar as well, talking to merchants and store owners, that there's days where you're just like, there's no way out of this. You get clouded, you get tunnel vision, and you've got to find that actually. I think that's a really good metaphor for it, of like, I've just got to hit this hard, or actually I'm going to get hit by it. And my first question is kind of on that, on a using that as a kind of metaphor, I think, for Facebook. You mentioned you obviously worked in Facebook advertising for many, many years, or Meta, as they want to be known for now. Like, it's still Facebook advertising to me.
Sure.
Facebook
for me,
ads.
It is still Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, Instagram as well. Is that, those are Facebook ads on Instagram in my head, since I've always known
exactly.
It. But obviously, there's two big milestones that I've been hit by on Meta advertising over the years. And it'd be interesting to ask you just quickly before we jump kind of more into the email world, how you tackled these. The first one was when Facebook made the change that if you had all these followers on your page and you posted, I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago now, they made the change that you'd only actually show to like 5% of the audience unless you pay. And obviously that's like, that was a massive slap in the face to all the marketeers, because you spent all this time building this. And the second one was obviously the iOS updates. So using that metaphor of hitting stuff head on, like most people I talked to when it was just a disaster and we're doing what we can, how did you guys find it? Was there anything different or unique that you were like, actually it created opportunity?
100%. So my first business was built on page like ads, because back in the day, that's all you could do. You could do nothing else. You could just run a page like ad in 2011 and 2012, nothing else. The next thing was post engagements, which was launched in 2013, I think. Mm. So I built the business on the back of page like ads, which meant you were building up an audience. And every time I posted something, about 50% of my audience saw that. So I had about 200,000 people following me on my page. And then every time I posted an article, they went to the site and they read the content, and it was amazing. So that declined over the years. And I think I realized that quite quickly. And also being, you can spot what's going to happen as an entrepreneur. You can almost like connect the dots. You're like, well, they're going to throttle this as much as possible because they want more people to pay for ads. Like, it just makes business sense. Yeah. So they're going to claim that it's all, you know, demand. And in theory, that's a lot of that is true. But at the same time, they need to monetize and make money. So looking at that, I spotted that trend, and I just started studying, you know, Facebook ads more and more and more. And I just fell in love with it, actually, because there is this analytical brain mind of that I have, like this part of my mind that I have that's very analytical. So I really enjoyed understanding the mechanics of, this is what I'm paying to get a like, this is what I'm paying to get an engagement, this is what I'm paying, as it evolved, a landing page view and a sale. And I just fell in love with that mechanisms, because I realized if I can manage that predictably, I can grow my business predictably. And it was really that simple back then. You know, there wasn't mechanics like iOS updates and attribution, dark matter holes, what do you call it? Like dark black holes.
Covered it on a webinar yesterday.
All the data. Yeah, all these random black holes that suck all the data in. You can't make this. Back then, it was like as simple as someone clicked, someone saw, someone bought, and you can scale. And when iOS came in, it was quite a difficult time for the agency, but Facebook did warn us about 6 months in advance, and they gave us some ideas on how to navigate the landscape. So obviously there was API aggregated events and all that kind of stuff that helped a lot. But in a nutshell, it just taught us to really focus on an omni-channel perspective more than anything else. Like it makes you realize that you can't just depend on one channel. And if you build a business that's dependent on one channel only, then you don't really have a legitimate or a solid business. Even though it might make you money, it might make you cash flow, but it's not valuable to sell to anybody. And I think I've always thought, how can I build something that's valuable to sell? Because that's the end goal, is to build something bigger that can take care of you one day in some way, shape or form. Looking at that, I realized you can't just depend on one channel. You really need to diverse and then see how you can use all these channels strategically in order to offset any losses on either one of them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And we work mostly on Google Ads, and we have seen it quite a lot in the past where clients are so reliant on Google Ads. And I don't know how much you guys do on Google, but you wake up one morning and it's like your logo has been disapproved and all your ads are off. And you're like, right, well, I need to fix that. And
you fix it by
2 p.m. that day. And it's like, okay, I've lost almost a whole day of sales. It's the 30th of the month. God forbid it happens on Black Friday. We had a client who on the Thursday morning before Black Friday, whole account disapproved. And it was because of I think someone had written a blog post that had a medical word on it, and Google had just thrown all the toys at the plan. And you're just like, right, well, we've got to deal with this.
Yeah, the thing is, there's not a human on the other side going, you know what, it's Black Friday, I'm not going to press this big red button
that's going to
disapprove their account.
It's just the machine.
Like, let me give them like a day just to figure this out.
yeah, exactly. And they have been better in the last couple of years, I'd say, Google. Like
even Meta as well.
Yeah. They've given you you've got 30 days to fix this. Sometimes they say like, we need this fixed now. Like you've got 24 hours because actually it's a regulatory problem. Fair enough. Like Google, like as much as you think you're advertising, you're not. Google is running an advert. You're paying Google to do that, but Google is running the advert, not you. So Google's the one that's liable. And also Google's lawyers are much more expensive than anybody else's as well. So there's got to be some sort of liability and kind of insurance for them. But I love what you're saying about building a community and looking at the omni-channel approach. Like, I'm going to ask you a really simple, what to you and I might seem like a really simple, bland question. I'm interested in your answer to this. And I think to some of our listeners who are quite early stage, this might be quite eye-opening. How does email play into that community, just in terms of like concepts? And then I think second question after that as well is then, and then how do you do it well? How do you actually make revenue and control the email? So actually, there's still a level of it in email, but you're not as reliant on Facebook or Google or anybody else for that kind of constant traction.
Exactly. So you're going to have to remind me of all the questions that you asked, but let's start with the first one.
Yep.
So I think in my mind, I started understanding the power of email back in 2013, 14, just after I unpacked and discovered Facebook ads and the power of that. And I was like, hold on, every time I want to sell, I have to pay Facebook to bring me that sale. Mm. And that sale's costing me, let's for example, say, you know, 10 quid, whatever it may be. And then I looked at email going, if I get someone's email address and a contact number, then I can distribute that message to them that I would have distributed on a platform like Facebook or Google at a much cheaper cost, because you're paying one monthly fee for the subscribers that you have in your database. Mm. And you can then send as many emails as you want, technically, if you think about it. So you can hit people with as many offers as you want at a much cheaper cost. So my brain just worked out at that time the formula going, what is the cost of distribution? Mm. And if you have a community, if you have a database, then you start to understand the cost of distribution is dramatically lowered. And if you have good messages in your emails and you actually get people to open it and respond to it, then you're going to lower the cost per sale as well.
Yep.
So that's just what I realized back in 2015. And in essence, that's when I started focusing on building community a lot for the business that I had at that time. And then when that business was bought over by another company, all I did for them, they didn't do a lot of digital at all. And I was like, listen, we're going to take this whole traditional budget. Yeah, sure. Do your flyers, but just give me, just do a little bit less of this, a little bit less of that.
Yep.
And let's just invest, you know, the rest of it into digital. And we just spent money on Facebook, Google, and building a database on the back of that. And we grew a database to 60 to 80,000 people within a year or two. And that business really went from 30 million to 100 million in like 3 or 4 years. And all we did was we just got in front of the game and versus everybody else. So to answer your question, like it lowers the cost of distribution, which means it can lower the cost of sale if done correctly. And the questions are, how do you do it correctly? Well, we live in a world where everybody is now emailing everybody, and you're getting SMSs and you're getting spammed with all kinds of notifications all day. So what you need to understand is like who you're speaking to. So you need to cut through the noise. Yeah. Like it's almost like the dog whistle effect, is really speaking to your customers in a way that they feel that it is actually truly meant for them. It's not an automated message of sorts.
Yeah.
I don't know in the UK, but in South Africa, we get phone calls. And then when you pick it up, it's a robot on the other side trying to sell you
insurance. We've had a few of those, yeah. Our government have started doing it.
It's the most annoying thing, and it's so unpersonal. I can't imagine that it's working, but people are still doing it. So maybe it is. But the reality is, if you really want to make this game work, you have to personalization is key. Mm. And chatting to your consumers like they're actually your friends is the best thing that we've seen for us. It's like connecting with them emotionally and nurturing them accordingly and making just being authentic. Just be you as a brand, whatever that brand looks like. And if you're a small business owner, that brand is you as a person. So just be you and tell people why your products are great. Tell them why your products are also not that great. There's maybe reasons why other products are better, and just be honest about it and say, look, this is the stuff that we have that's amazing. And here's some other stuff that we have that we believe that you like. But if you don't like them, tell us what you don't like about it so we can improve it for you, because we care about you and we want to give you the most amount of value. So to answer your question, I think it's just being as personal as possible. And I think a little hack that we've implemented, which I think every single marketer has figured out now over the last decade of digital marketing, is curiosity is key. So if you can create curiosity with your email in some way, shape, or form whilst keeping it personal, you should definitely be able to increase your percentage of engagements. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to jump back to your answer to the first question first, because I want to add a point to it that I completely agree with what you said. And I use this analogy a lot, that if you imagine marketing or your customer database a bit like a snowball, and the more it rolls, the more snow gets added. So take that analogy and think for a second, like, okay, all my paid advertising, if that's currently driving like 80, 90% of the business, then that snowball is losing snow all over the place that I'm paying for. So I'm having to spend for 70, 80% of every single order all the time.
But another way to look at it is also versus, you can think of buying a house versus renting a house.
Yep.
You see, like if you run ads on Google and Meta, then you're technically renting the house and you can get kicked out anytime, because if that tenant decides that you've done something he doesn't like, or they're trying to sell the house to someone else, then you're out on the street. Mm. And that's what we call banned accounts and, logos that don't get approved, or like you discussed earlier. So that's you renting a house and getting kicked out. But when you actually build a community and you actually focus on growing your email list and your contact number list, then you're actually owning the house, because now you've bought your own house and you can do with that what you want. You can paint the walls, you can break things down, you can really just mold it to what you think is best for your business.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think the flip side of that, if you do it really well, is the house ownership, or looking at the snowball, is like if 70 or 80% of my sales come from existing customers, using the phrase you used earlier about omnichannel, is if we do omnichannel well and we do it right, then what happens with omnichannel is you see like direct sales coming in, brand search that comes through SEO on Google, or really cheap clicks on PPC, and you got email, and then you got some of your social audiences. Those guys are all engaging with you, and all it's costing is your time to go, hey, here's a message, send, whether that's on email, it's something that you send on a text message, you can phone them up, you can post stuff to them, you can post on your social channels. If that's 70 to 80% of what you're doing, now your marketing cost of total revenue is like 20%. Whereas a lot of businesses are running at like 60, 70% at least. And you still got to factor in the price of the product, the price of running Shopify, which Shopify looks really cheap until you get onto Shopify Plus and you're paying big transaction fees and you've got 50 apps to do all the 50 things you need it to. And now your page speed's suffering and it all starts to become quite complicated. Like, just because, I always take this approach as well, like just because a brand's big doesn't mean they know what they're doing or they don't have challenges. And actually, but the same thing is if a brand is big.
Or that they're actually profitable.
Yeah.
I've seen that too.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like a lot of e-commerce businesses these days are shiny apples with rotten cores.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that analogy as well. But I think let's talk about email content quickly as well, because you use the word curiosity and I love that. You know, that email, that the first one that sprung to mind is like, hey, you might like this. And if you don't, it's fine. And you're like, what is it? So now you've opened the email and then you have the opportunity to say like, right, there's three hidden things behind these three targets or whatever. Pick one and it will have an exclusive offer for you and you can choose which one you want. Click it, goes to a landing page. You've selected the first one. First one appears, you're getting 5% off, but you could have got 20% off. So we're not even giving you 20%, but you know it's on the table, which is cool. I love the kind of curiosity side of stuff, and I've seen lots of campaigns like that.
You know what? The thing is, our brains are designed to figure stuff out. Mm. Like our brains can't rest until we actually have clarity on what it is on the back of what we were curious about. For example, that is why, every single series episode ends with a cliffhanger. Like, it's like that curiosity is what brings you back to the next episode. And at the end of the day, like, our brains are designed to figure stuff out. We struggle to let things go if we don't know what the end message is or the end goal was or whatever it is. So looking into that as a hack is, as you can implement that in your marketing, you can manipulate people and you can obviously persuade them at the same time with all these kinds of hacks. But at the same time, it's looking at it going, what can we do ethically in a fun way that is going to build trust and credibility and authenticity in this relationship? And how can we keep it fun and light with the consumer on the other side? And one thing we do quite well with OmniSend, This is not a plug. We literally love the platform. We have a lot of clients on KVO as well. But one of the things that we love is the Wheel of Fortune. It's like, hey, spin and win. And people are just like, well, I want to spin and win, maybe see if I win something, because there's odds of me winning whatever it is. Like, let me just do it because it's right in front of my face. So we figured that the timing of that is also very crucial, because you can easily annoy someone with a pop-up. But if you time it perfectly, after they truly engaged and ready to actually pay attention to what's in front of them, then we see some super healthy sign-up rates.
That's cool. So like, you put it on the basket, for example. So like, I'm in the basket, I can see all the costs now. And then it's like, oh, you get 10% off. It's like, well, if I wasn't jumping off that cliff, I am now. Like, let's do it. Yeah, I'll buy that product.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I think you're absolutely right, because the spin to win, I mean, we were discussing earlier about the UK market versus South African market versus US market. And it's like, in the UK, if you land on a website and on the homepage, the first thing you see is spin to win. The UK is not an advocate of like casinos in Las Vegas and stuff in the same way like the American culture is. So yeah, you see that on the homepage and it's like a complete turn off. Like, and I have to say, as much as I love Caroline, I used to run the podcast, when I first became CEO of the business with Caroline and got more involved, we had a Wheel of Fortune on the homepage of the site. I took it straight off. Conversion rate plummeted. I took it straight off because I was like, it's awful. My team were like, that is so rubbish. And Caroline was like, stop. Most of you listening right now are sitting in the US. It's just a different market. And I think, like we've kind of said already, like omnichannel, we do it for the customer. It's got to work for the customer. And I just came in so naively and so like bullshit. It's just like, I'm English. No, get rid of that. Get rid of that. It's like, my customers aren't English. Most of the listeners in the podcast, it's grown since I've been running it. The English audience, but you've got to do stuff for your customer base. So look at where they're based, talk to them, find out what they want. And I love what you said about keeping it light. And I think the more you engage with, and you said earlier as well, like engaging with customers, not using AI robots and stuff on the phone, but having an authentic conversation with a customer, is really key.
The biggest deal that I've made in my life is when I'm my most authentic self and I'm just speaking to the millionaire, multimillionaire, billionaire on the other side, like this. It's like, yo, hey, I'm Yandre. What's up? How are you doing? And I think sometimes as businesses, we put up this facade that we're bigger than we are. We're more professional than we really are. But I think consumers want businesses that are just authentic. And we're also moving into a time where businesses want to know who's behind the business as well. So there's that. I believe in my heart that if you just do your most authentic self, you're going to attract customers who fit in with you and that energy that you produce as a company. I'm a big believer in energy, but without making this a philosophical conversation, it's really understanding whatever you're producing, there's someone on the other side who's going to be wanting to connect with that as long as you are yourself. So businesses are trying to be overly professional, too strict with their emails. They write subject lines that are all caps and everybody's going to ignore that. It looks great for corporate CI, but it doesn't mean anything to the person on the other side, because they immediately know that it's a company emailing them and they don't want to receive messages from your company. As much as you love your company, they probably don't. And I think as business owners, we get overly romantic about our businesses and we think because we love our company and the stuff that we do that other people will too. And like I said to a business owner the other day, it's like, it's not about whether you think your product's amazing or not, it's whether the customer thinks it's amazing or not. So what are the reviews like? You know, and he had like 10 reviews over 4 months. I was like, that's not good.
Yeah.
You know, like unless you sold only 10 products to 10 people, then that's amazing. But if you've had 200 sales and you've only got 10 reviews, then we need to figure out what's wrong. Do we need to get more people to review the product, or do you actually have to fix the product so that more people are inclined to actually give you feedback on how amazing it is? So I think from my perspective is being your most authentic self, email, curiosity, obviously all those things work, but at the same time, keeping it light helps because we're all humans and you're selling to other humans. That's what I've learned, no matter how big the deal is.
Yeah. And I think there's two things I would couple up here as a balance, and they're opposite sides of a set of scales. And I find I've still not found a business that has these perfectly balanced. Some claim to, and you know what it's like when you know what it's like working with clients and you talk to a new merchant, they're like, we are so unprecious as a business. That is the precious warning light on in our heads going like, they're obviously really, really precious. The fact they need to tell me they're not precious about the brand. And I did it myself. Like, you know, we've hired a couple of people recently to start doing some different things within my agency and also on the podcast. And I've said to them like, look, you just do whatever you want. And they're like, you don't mean that. Like, you know, so I think the two things I would put on either side of that balancing scale, one is like really understanding who the customer is. And it's such a generic thing to say. We talk about it almost every single week on the podcast. Yet I still have people going like, what's the best email subject line? I'm like, the one that works. How do I work that out? By knowing who you're sending it to. Well, I'm sending it to those people. You have no idea who they are. Like, you've got their names. You might have even got some of their genders wrong. You don't even know what percentage of them are male and female.
Yeah. What are they like? What don't they like? And what do they like to spend their money on if they're not buying products like yours? It's stuff like that as well.
Yeah. And like my wife and I, we have a joint Amazon account in my name, but she buys more stuff on it. You know, like, I'm not gonna make any jokes about gender stereotypes, but Amazon, if they don't read their data properly, will go, men are interested in these products, which some of which they're not for me, they're for her.
Yeah.
So like, you've got to understand kind of who's buying and why. But if Amazon don't ask me and find out exactly what I just said, that my wife purchases more than I do on my account, they won't know. But then if they start looking at like device locations, they'd see that my wife often buys when she's at home. I often buy when I'm in the office. Well, that's a really clear distinctive, you know, and there's probably a lot of people that fit that trend, but it's probably not the biggest trend. So I think in terms of segmenting databases or understanding who customers are, you have to talk to them, you know, pick up the phone, schedule a call, give them 10% off if they give you 10 minutes of their time. And say, like, if it goes over 10 minutes, you get another percent for every minute that we're talking, because your time's valuable and we want to know as much as we can from you, even if it means you get a free product.
Well, and that's the biggest mistake that we see with email. That's the biggest mistake we see with email marketing when people join. And email marketing is a big portion of our business. And at the end of the day, we see that they have a database of like 60 to 100,000 people, but it's one database. And they're sending the same message to all 100,000 people.
You all want to buy the same chair. No, we don't.
Exactly.
I bought a chair last week and you're still selling me chairs. Like, I'm off. I'm unsubscribing.
So to filter, I think what I'm trying to say is like, personalization is such a big thing, but it is applied to everything you do. It's applied to the Facebook ad copy you write. It's applied to the creative that you use in the Facebook ad. It's applied to the Google headline. It's applied to the subject line. It applies to the actual essence of the mail that you're sending. And obviously there are all these granular tactics on how to ensure that you segment things correctly from a personalization standpoint. But the bottom line is, personalization is key. And I think that's the biggest thing that people need to understand. And that only works if you understand who your customer is. If you're not going to understand who they are, they can't personalize it to them. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a really good example of this, and I won't mention their name because I don't know if they're trading anymore, but it's a business we worked with about 10 years ago. And I think they've sold the product now, but they basically designed a type of walking stick for people with certain conditions, which means people with these conditions can now go hiking, but couldn't before. When we arrived, the whole website was focused on what is in this walking stick. What was it made from and how do we make it? Not once does it say, this is for people who currently can't climb mountains. You buy this product, you can now climb mountains. This is a game changer. Yes. This is going to change your life. It's a really cool piece of tech, but they didn't focus at all on what it was. And then, and this was the real killer bit, is we convinced them to do their first ever customer survey, send this out. It was just 10 questions. And we also put, it looked like 10 questions to the customer. It's really smart in the back end. And I made it. I was quite proud of this. Had loads of decision trees. You answer yes to that, you go down this route. You answer no to that, you go down this route. And loads of little bits. There were actually about 100 questions in total and you go down different routes. But on average, people got 10 questions out of this thing. And it was really, I thought it was quite smart. And it did that. And we found out that probably less than 5% or something, it's a tiny, tiny amount of their customers actually use this product to go hiking. So although I had come in and it sounded great with this passionate, like, you should use it for this, we found out actually people were just using it to go to the shops, or they lived in a hilly area and were using it. And we thought,
it just looked cool.
Or it looked cool. Yeah, it was cool. It was like green, black and orange. Like, it was really striking branding. And we thought it was elderly people. So they were planning to change the color of it to make it look a bit more subtle and a bit less kind of like, I'm a teenager in their 30s kind of thing, like you and I. But they completely misunderstood that actually it was people in their 20s, 30s, 40s were using this thing. So it was colored correctly, but the imagery was all wrong. And actually it was like a sort of, you know, do you struggle to go to the shops because you live on a hill, but you don't want to move and moving's expensive? This product is for you. This can help you. And we ended up with like six different marketing campaigns to six different groups of people, split the email campaigns up and bang, it was working. And the whole time we were just the PPC agency, but this is the depths, like that was 10 years ago. We're doing even more of that as you clearly are as well. We as agencies need to be doing more of this stuff now to go, do you know what, to get a good conversion rate on PPC, you need to be a good business with a good product and understand who your customers are. And you say about, you were not wanting to get too philosophical on the podcast. The reason I laugh is because every episode we do, we always go down that rabbit hole of like, we are humans talking to humans. And I think, you know, the two things, going back to that scales, I didn't say what the second one was. One of them really is like using the data, like, you know, what is the data telling us who's our customer? The other side, which can get lost if you go too heavy down that side, but that gets ignored if you go too heavy down this side, is creativity. So the answer is not just going, right, these people using this walking stick are climbing hills in their local areas and they're in their 20s, 30s and 40s. The answer is going, right, get creative juices flowing. Let's have a coffee or have a beer, you know, and actually get the whiteboard out. How could we advertise this product?
Well, for a drunken night out, that stick might work really well, you know?
Exactly. And creativity is the thing that's so often lost. And it's lost because people are scared of making a mistake. But let's be honest, all good things come out of people testing stuff and making mistakes. So I used the analogy the other day of saying, like, I think one of our previous guests, it might have been in the last episode, we were saying that, like, we're right probably 8 or 9, 10 times out of 10, which is good. But, and I made the point of saying, even if we were only right 1 in 10, well, we need to run 10 tests to find out what the right thing is. Mm. And at the risk of not finding that out, we're stupid for not trying. And we've got to try this stuff.
Also, just for future business growth as well. Like, I mean, I always think long term, I always think like the next 3, 5, 10 years. And I think a lot of business owners want the quick fix now. Yeah. So it's like they want to, I know this works, let's just do it. You know, let's just send this email campaign and get the sales. Or let's just run this ad and get the sales, or this campaign, or bring in this product. Is like, listen, like, yes, there are micro strategies in order to make sure that you get by this month and you're still profitable. But at the same time, you also have to adapt a longer point view. And that comes hand in hand. That's hand in hand with understanding your market and doing as much research as possible. And testing. Testing is expensive. I don't think a lot of business owners understand how expensive testing actually is, because every time you run a test, there's no guarantee that you're going to get money back. Yeah. But there's a lesson that you're not going to get money back, but you're going to get lessons back. You're going to get information back. You're going to get data back, which will eventually allow you to lower your CPA down the line. So it's like when people go, oh, I need a paid media agency because, you know, all we've been doing is this and it's been working, but now our business is declining. That we as an agency come in and like, well, that's not working anymore. So now we have to go and test 10 different other things. And in the short term, that's extremely expensive to do. And as understanding, it only starts paying for itself long term. And I don't think a lot of people have the, you know, the decent enough businesses, or they're just not engraved in them to have the patience and the mindset to understand that, you know, this all takes time and it is an expensive exercise to do. So we say you have to understand your customer, but at the same time, I want to be cognizant of the fact that a lot of small businesses probably don't have the time or the patience or the money to actually exercise all of that.
Yeah. And one of the biggest things I'm finding at the moment, and this is a really good tip, I think, for anyone who's like earlier stage, and it's all relative, obviously, like 1 year in could be early stage, or 1 month could be an early stage if you're going to sell it in three and you've got a good VC backing you and you've done this 20 times before. But one thing I'm finding so much that is really, really tough and brands are struggling with, I think it starts with when they look at their website and we ask them the question, why buy from you? You know, where's the USP, the unique element of like, you've got something that nobody else has. Where's the unique element? Then you take one layer off the onion and you're like, the next layer really is like, who do we even stand for as a business? What are we trying to achieve here? Then you take the next layer off and you go, we don't even have any brand guidelines. And so we've said to clients recently, go away and write your brand guidelines. And they've gone, all right, title needs to be that size, this font. We're like, that is not what we're asking. Like, that's the easy stuff. Like, who are you at the core? And it normally starts with the founders. Like, you probably have to do it as well. I've had to do it my own agency and go like, all right, who am I? Literally me as an individual. What am I about? What am I passionate about? Why do brands hire me to do stuff? And then why have I hired this team of people similar to me with similar thinking and obviously new extra awesome stuff that they bring to the team? But where are they at? And I think so many like e-commerce brands, they kind of either lose the mission or they refuse to adapt to the mission, or they didn't have a mission in the first place. It was just, I can get a hold of them cheaper than anyone else. I can sell them cheaper than anyone else. It's a race to the bottom. And you launch all of that and then your competitor goes, we need to lower our price, lowers the price, and we can acquire customers cheaper than you because we've been running for 10 years. We've got a big email database. So we're just going to lower our price. Bang, we've lost our edge. And we're $1 million of investment in here. And like, we've lost our edge. It's a common problem.
Oh, I see it all the time.
How do you find brands go down that journey? Like, is there anything you guys have been doing that you found interesting, or any case studies where you're like, that's a particular one where they stood for nothing? We've changed little bits, but conversion rate's gone through the roof. Because
we serve the small to medium-sized businesses of this country. And I think we realize a lot of, especially online businesses, are people who lost, like, if I reflect, we've got obviously enterprises, we've got some really successful companies. We do work with them. I'm speaking from the perspective of small to medium-sized businesses. A lot of them have started during COVID or before COVID or just after COVID. A lot of people were retrenched and then they realized, hey, I've got a skill. I like doing this. I like this kind of sport. So I'm just going to bring in the products and sell it. And it's going to do well during the time of COVID 2021, 2020. And now all of a sudden, a lot of them are struggling to grow their businesses because they don't have the skill or the knowledge to understand how they should have been pricing their products all along.
Yep.
We've had so many people come on board whose businesses we've scaled, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but literally 30, 40, 50, sometimes even 100% within 90 to 120 days. But then they actually cancel because they're going backwards because they don't understand their own business economics, because they just didn't know how to price the product, because everybody thinks cheaper is better. So cheaper is not better. I mean, Amazon has proven to a fact that it is. But again, if you read there's a book I have, The Bezos Letters. I just gave it to a staff member yesterday. it's Bezos Letters, which he basically writes and explains his long-term thinking on how he's built Amazon and why he's going after the most affordable price. But he can also afford to do that because he's leveraging other people to drop their price. He's not dropping his own prices. Yep. So it's understanding like he's making other people drop their prices so he can take care of his consumers as Amazon. So if you're a business that is the person who's you need to sell this product and make a profit so that you can actually feed yourself and your family, then dropping your price is never the best thing to do unless you can justify the volume on the back of that, which very seldom is the case. So it is understanding how can you actually price it fairly, that it's profitable, and then get people to understand why the price of the product is the price of the product. And I think that's where business owners struggle. They don't know how to articulate the value of the product. You jump onto a product page and it's like a 2-sentence description. And the product's like $100.
I work in SEO, mate. I've seen enough of those over the years.
Exactly. It's like people don't know how to articulate the actual value of the product. What is it made of? Why is it made of that? Where did you find that? What is this? Oh, it's better quality. Okay, it lasts longer. Oh, you've got 1,000 washes out of that as opposed to 500. Why are these jeans this price? Oh, okay, cool. Well, that makes sense. So I always explain it like if you walk into a retail store, the first thing that happens is that there's a sales representative that walks, towards you and goes, "Hey, sir, can I help you with something?" And you're gonna, "Hey, I want these pair of jeans, but this is $500, or this is $50, and this is $500." It's like, "I don't want this one. This is way too expensive." But then he goes, "Wait for a second. Like, have you ever thought about the fact that it's this kind of material and it was made on the back ends of Italy and it was sourced on from this specific place? And at the end of the day, like, if you can get like a 2,000 washes out of it before anything is going to happen with this one." And the business on the other side is going to go, "Oh, that's really cool. I don't really understand. Let me, it's probably worth the investment to do." So when it comes to your product pages, it's exactly the same thing. It's like you need to build in that sales representative in a digital format. I'm not saying that you have to have a chatbot that pops up and explains these things, but it's understanding that it's the psychology of getting someone to understand the value of the product.
Yep.
And I think that's where people struggle. They don't know how to articulate the value of the product in a digital format on a landing page necessarily, so that people can go, "I'm happy to pay this price." And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. I saw an amazing offer when I was in the US last week, and you just reminded me of this hilarious offer, and it was like one for $2.50. And if you buy two, $5. That was the end of the promotion. And I laughed at it. And then my wife sort of mumbled like, "Well, at least they've done the maths for you." And I was like, "It's not a bad point, actually. Maybe they've literally worked out that people," I think it was in Whole Foods, the supermarket, it's like, "maybe people have realized that, like, if we do the maths for them, they're like, do you know what? $0 to $2.50 feels like a bigger jump emotionally than $2.50 to $5.
That's
so
funny.
It works. It just works. But I love what you're saying. Like, this is music to my ears. It's exactly what we do so much, like CRO stuff and this whole kind of value proposition behind products. I think the one thing you didn't mention on the jeans, I was like, is he going to mention it? It's always, and you kind of mentioned it with the washes, is the whole like, am I going to have to buy three of these products over the next 10 years or just one?
Yeah. Exactly.
And the problem is, and here's the issue, because I used to evangelize that everywhere and be like, just buy less stuff. Like, this is from Crew Clothing. It's really good quality. Buy less. The problem with that I've now come up with, and this is my personality debater type going, what's the other side of the equation? The problem is people want new stuff.
Yeah.
And so I've been really inspired by a lot of brands now that are doing a recycling program. So I don't know if Crew specifically do it, but I've seen brands now that have said like, "All right, you bought that jumper from us. It was £50, $50. You bought that. We'll give you 30 back off a new one, which means your new one's only 20. Send us that one. We'll recycle it, send it to charity, put it in our refurbished range, whatever, put it in our used range, put it on our eBay account. So we'll sell it for you basically. So you get a new one, but your old one isn't wasted. And you're now paying $70, but you've had two different jumpers out of it instead of $100. It's quite a good price, but it's exactly what you've just been preaching about. Like, I think preaching's the word on this, is like, which you and I need to do, is you have to give clear value. And the thing I hate the most, and this is what really grinds my gears on landing pages, is when people put just bland statements with nothing to back it up. High quality, that annoys me no end.
Super ambiguous, subjective. Yeah.
Who says it's high quality? If it's won an award, like, this is a high quality phone case.
But even based on what?
Yeah, but if they said you can drop it from any height and the phone is guaranteed to survive, well, that's something that something is based on now. Like there's a phone case company in the UK. We used to work with them called Mouse, M-O-U-S. As soon as the new iPhone comes out, they put it in one of their laptops, they put it in their case, they drop it on the CEO's car. And it's like, I don't even care if it is the CEO or not. This is a cool piece of entertaining content. And the fact that I remember that, where as soon as anyone mentions durability in products, I haven't worked with them for like 3 or 4 years, but I'm like, that just sticks in my mind. And I saw that like a month ago on Instagram, and it's just stuck in my mind since.
There's a couple of marketers I look up to and they do it quite well. And, you know, Frank Kern is one of the all-time greats. And I think there's people like Dan Kennedy and whatnot. But like, it's understanding the two things that makes marketing successful is authentic marketing and objective marketing.
Yep.
So if you can be authentic with your message and you can be objective in terms of the value that people can actually make sense out of it, like you said, like you can drop it from this amount of height and your phone will be fine. Yeah. That's exactly what people want to know. The brain is not designed to understand what high quality means. Like ambiguous subjective terms don't mean anything to us. So it's understanding, like, you need to tangibly prove that in some way, shape or form, and then objectively explain it in a few seconds, because that's the only attention span you're going to get from the customer.
Yep.
So how can you take it, make them feel like it's authentic, at the same time objective, and articulate that in the shortest amount of time?
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, ask your customers, you know, what do you use this product for? Like the walking stick, where are you based? How often do you use it? Like, and literally ask them, like, what is it about this? What's your favorite feature about this product? Like I bought my wife it for Christmas and she laughed when she opened it until she used it. I bought her a foot massager.
Nice.
So you put your feet in, it does all this like kneading and stuff on your feet, warms your feet up. And I asked the other day, like, what's the best thing about this? And she was like, and she basically said, I don't have to beg you to do it. Was her thing.
Boo.
And
I was like, literally thinking to myself, that's the first thing I'm getting when I'm getting off this call.
Well, hopefully this goes out for after her birthday. I've bought her a neck massager next. That's her birthday present and it's in a few days. Yeah. So that's the next item for her. But I was literally thinking like the whole thing on, I think I bought it through Amazon, but the whole thing was like, it's warm and it does this and it does this. I was like, no, just the first thing should say, like, never ask your other half for a massage again. Like, and you'd be like, brilliant. I just click a button and I get a massage. It's genius. So like, it's stuff like that. I think and the fact it's got heat mode as well.
Well, I click a button and I'm free from a massage, having to give a massage.
Even better. Which also means that we've got a bit on our couch where you can put your feet up. And of course, if you've got your feet up, you can't use the massager. So I get that whole section to myself now because she's using the massager when we watch films. I'm like, I've literally nailed this. This is absolutely brilliant. But look, last thing I want to talk about, we've got sort of 4 or 5 minutes left on this, but last thing I want to talk about, which we haven't covered, that I think is super important, is certainly, again, we talk about kind of big picture for some of the macro brands, bringing it back to the little brands again, and probably works for the big brands as well, but bringing it back to the little guys. When they're trying to build an email database, like obviously we've explained why it's good to do email, how to do email effectively. How do you build that database? Like, what's some good tactics to start thinking about with that?
Yeah, look, I mean, a lot of people are going to have different comments on what I'm about to say, but I think, you know, the Wheel of Fortune is a great way to do that. If you're already driving traffic to your existing site, then and a lot of the traffic, whether it's organic or paid or whatever it may be, we've just seen that the Wheel of Fortune is a great way to do it because people are incentivized to actually use the prize or the discount code. We usually do discount codes of some sort. So you actually getting emails from people who are open to spending money with you, as opposed to doing a giveaway where a lot of people might just want a free item. So, you know, a lot of people do giveaways. Giveaways do work, and there are ways to filter, you know, weaker quality leads from better quality leads so that you don't fill up your database and your subscription with people who probably never intend to buy from you. So there's obviously tactics around how to do a giveaway successfully. There are tactics on how to do contests, you know, successfully. But I think the Wheel of Fortune, for example, you know, ebooks, for example, I mean, nobody really pays attention to ebooks anymore, to be honest with you. So let's rather change that to
too wordy.
It's just too long. You know, it's like what we've seen is like people, especially in the consulting space, people love mini courses, a quick little mini course, like 2-3 videos on how to do something, or three, four, five videos on how to get this right. So consulting coaches works amazingly well. So, I mean, I've got, even for myself, like something I just have as an evergreen strategy. I've got one of my masterclasses that I just run. It's like the biggest mistakes. I think the masterclass is called The Biggest Mistakes E-commerce Businesses Make, that drains their profits.
Yeah.
So, you know, people go, oh, well, my profits have been down too. Maybe I'm making these mistakes. Again, there's curiosity in that. And I just run that as an evergreen funnel to our business to build a database. But from an e-commerce perspective, you have to ask yourself, do you have to go fetch the people? Because then you most likely have to do something enticing like a giveaway or whatever. Or are people already coming to you? How can you squeeze the most amount of data out of the people already coming to your site?
Yep.
So that's really what it boils down to then. It's asking yourself those two things. But again, like there's perspectives around it that people might value or not. Some people might say, don't do a giveaway. It's the worst thing ever. But when you look at what they've done, they've given away an iPhone when they're actually selling furniture. So it's like realizing like, you know, there are ways to do that correctly in order to ensure that you fill your database with really quality leads.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone wants to win an iPhone, not everyone wants to buy furniture. So if you give away a piece of furniture, now you've got a database of people that want to buy furniture, which is a much better way of doing it. And I think I love the fact you've got a hook on everything. And I think that's where a lot of e-commerce brands fall down when you say like, we should build a database more. And they're like, no one wants to sign up. And it's like, well, not at the moment they don't. But we could change
that. Well, not for a newsletter, they don't. Because they say, hey, get 10% off if you sign up for our newsletter. What you're saying is get 10% off if we can spam you every week.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's not what people want to hear. Like, no. You need to find a way to create a hook that makes people feel, I actually want to leave my data. Like, do you want to be a VIP member? Do you want to be the first person to know about new deals? Do you want to be in our exclusive community club where we share weight loss tips which you're not going to find necessarily online or on our social feeds or whatever it may be? So it's really making more of an exclusivity angle to it. There's a curiosity angle to it. You can test all these things out for your business. And again, the tactic that you choose, whether it's the Wheel of Fortune or whether it's just a landing page where you drive people to, or whether it's a mini course funnel, like all of those are just tactics essentially. But the macro recipe is create some form of curiosity or exclusivity. And that's what people would want to be a part of essentially.
Yeah, nice. And look, final question from us then. You know, I really appreciate your time today. It's been great to have you on here. How can people reach out? If people want to get in touch, want to come and have a chat with you or even go on your course. What's a good way to reach out?
Yeah, man, just two things. I'm still old fashioned. I still look at my emails daily. So my email, yandre@v8media.co.za. They're welcome to reach me on that. That's spelled jandre@v8media.co.za. And then just on our website, V8 Media, which is the letter V, number 8, media.co.za. Welcome to get in touch if they want to. I hope there was some value for you guys. I really enjoyed our conversation. It was also very nice meeting you. So yeah, thanks for everything.
Yeah, amazing. No, really appreciate you coming on the show. And it's been great to have you. And for everybody listening at home as well, hope you've enjoyed today's show. If you have and you haven't clicked the subscribe button already, obviously click that. And we hope to have you joining us again next week. We post pretty much every Friday. So thanks for tuning in. Hope to see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can subscribe to our weekly newsletter for exclusive offers at winningwithshopify.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook group by searching for Winning with Shopify on Facebook. Over and out.